Scrap Yarn, written by Waveridden, narrated by Rhea 314. Fandom, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. Rating general audiences, no archive warnings apply. Relationship, Edgin Darvis and Holga Kilgore. Edgin makes it about an hour into their prison sentence before he starts getting antsy about the whole thing. Not the imprisonment, not the 2-year sentence, although those will sink in soon enough, as soon as he realizes that this isn't the kind of prison you can waltz out of. But about Holga. Ordinarily, she'd put him out of his misery, but she's also a little antsy and more than a little angry, so she decides to watch him suffer. She sits in silence, a skill she hates having but knows how to use all the same, and familiarizes herself with their cell. Number of bricks in the wall, which ones look loose, which ones probably actually are loose, which slats on her bed squeak when she moves, how to make them squeak, just to watch Edgin's eye twitch. Unfortunately, Edgin's the most important person in her life, and also the only one she has right now, so this loses its charm after about 40 minutes. Finally, after an eternity that ends up being less than 2 hours total, Holga says, "You can tell me, you know." "I can tell you about..." "Why you were going to leave me behind?" Edgin goes perfectly still for a heartbeat, too, and then lays down flat on his back facing the ceiling. "It wasn't about you." "I know." "It was about Kira." "I know." "Then why?" "Two things can be true at once," Holga says. "I can understand and be angry." When the spell had worn off, when time had unstopped, Holga had regained her senses before Edgin. She had certainly regained enough to know that he had left her, or tried. For Kira. For Zia. For his own skin, and maybe she'd be less angry if he admitted that part. The whole faux nobility thing never looked good on him, and unfortunately she doesn't think he realizes he's faking it. Either way, they'd fought the Harpers and lost, and Holga could live with that. She could even live with the sentence, at least for a little while. She doesn't know how to live with Ed turning his back on her and running, even if it didn't take. She's still looking at him, as measured and even as she can manage. Something's boiling inside her, and someone else is crumbling. She can love Marla Min and miss him. She can grieve her marriage and her tribe. She can understand Edgin's urge to run to Kira and profoundly resent the way that would have meant leaving her behind. All at once. "I know you can," Ed says. "Holga, we're really in it now, aren't we?" It's something he says all the time. It's never felt so bleak before. Before she can second guess it, Holga gets to her feet, crosses the 1.5 paces to Edgin's bed, and lies down alongside him, head to toe. They've done it in countless taverns, to huddle for warmth while camping. It's easier than looking at his face. Besides, if they were face to face, normally it was because Kira was between them. Ed jostles her gently, knee bumping against her chest. "You didn't answer." "I'm still mad at you," Holga says. "And you already know the answer."
"That we're fucked?"
"Definitely fucked."
"Maybe in 2 years we won't be."
"Edgin," Holga sighs. "You don't have to bright side this one. You can just live with being fucked for a little bit."
"Maybe you can,"
Edgin says, with a bit of an edge to his voice. Holga knows what he's thinking. 2 years of Kira's life. He didn't want to leave her for the 2 weeks it took to get to Corrin's keep. Holga wants to snap, but she forces herself to breathe deep and try to still herself. After all, it wouldn't do to remind him that 2 years is their best possible outcome. Technically, that would be a fantastically early parole. Their sentence is much, much longer than that. The chain gang is miserable and freezing, but it's an outlet. Holga has always been good at hitting things. Lift pick, swing pick, hit ice. Repeat. She has the muscles for it, something that Edgin is definitely lacking. Holga knows how to treat the pains of exercise, but she doesn't know how to do it with the limited resources at Revel's End. "Isn't there a guy?" Edgin complains on the third day, when he finally can't stop himself from whimpering in pain every time he tries to lift his arms over his head. "You know, a guy who can get things. Painkillers, warm compresses." Holga stares. "You want me," she says slowly, "to find a guy. Can't you?" She has to clamp down on a laugh. "You want me to be the social one." "Holga," Edgin says, with no small amount of desperation. "I literally cannot do it right now. It's just a favor." All they have is favors. Holga wants to groan and complain. Instead, she forces herself to look at Edgin. Really look. He hasn't been eating enough. She thinks if she weren't there, he would be crying through the nights, or at least showing some kind of emotion. Instead, he's been managing it all with a smile so sharp, Holga is afraid of him slicing himself on its edges. "Fine," Holga says at last. "But favors are a currency here, so." "I already owe you more than I'll ever be able to repay," Edgin says, impatient, smiling, bottomless grief hiding beneath it all. "What's one more favor? Add it to the list, I know you keep one." Edgin has to suffer through 2 more days of Holga trying to track down leads and find a smuggler before she alights on them randomly. Galia Strand, a human with dusky brown skin and watchful eyes. "Painkillers are hard to get," Strand says, "and so is anything warm. I can do bandages. Complimentary because you're new. What else can I get you?" "Matches." "For free? Not likely." "Firewood?" "Girly," Galia Strand says, and they're probably going to say something else derogatory before something that's been pulled tight inside Holga snaps unceremoniously. It's not that Holga doesn't remember drawing herself to her full height, or backing Strand into a corner, or leaving the bruises on their upper arms. The memories are clear. They just exist behind memories of Kira. Young, sweet Kira, playing jokes and demanding Holga teach her to throw a real punch. Learning to run. Young Kira, who's either going to be living with Forge fucking Fitzwilliam, or with nobody at all. And those are both equally bad because neither of them have Holga in the picture. All Holga knows is that Edgin, the only person in the world who's truly here, lights up when Holga returns with some bandages and a fistful of firewood. Not enough for a real fire, not enough to get rid of the chill in their bones, but enough to warm the bandages. Lift pick, swing pick, hit ice. It's not a bad rhythm, all told. Holga's had worse. Leave, return, argue, hit someone, get hit, don't stay down. The weight of the pick isn't quite right, not as good as any weapon she's ever wielded, not quite as satisfying when it hits. This doesn't even feel like penance, and if Holga is going to seek penance from anyone, it won't be Revel's End. Lift, swing, hit. Lift, swing, hit. Break, call out, move, lift, swing, hit. Hope the ice doesn't break beneath her feet. She thinks, sometimes, about what would happen if it did. It's an abstract thing to keep her idle mind busy as her body moves. She imagines the ice falling out beneath Edgin and grabbing to save him, and the spiteful smugness of saying, "Well, I saved you, didn't I?" She imagines the ice falling out beneath him and not being able to move in time. She imagines being colder, because it's better than imagining being warm. The ice doesn't break. Holga lifts her pick again. Okay, maybe she should have noticed sooner. Edgin's masks aren't foolproof, and Holga knows him well enough to know that he's hurting. But there's a difference between knowing and being ready for the day that Edgin stops talking. And even that takes too long to realize. At first, she thinks she's imagining it. But then he's silent on the chain gang, silent as they eat their prison food, silent as they return to their cell. "Ed," Holga says, and he climbs into her bed, head to toe. He wraps himself around her calves and doesn't say anything. He's shaking, but it's not a shiver, and it doesn't feel unhealthy. Holga knows Edgin, knows him drunk and stumbling and angry and grieving and overjoyed and afraid. This isn't something wrong, not in the same way. It feels like an absence of something, and she doesn't know what. The next day, on the gang, Barlow tries to say something to Edgin. Holga misses what it is, but she doesn't miss the way Barlow starts shouting at Edgin. "Sing," Barlow jeers. "We've heard it before. What's one more song?" She positions herself between them, and Barlow quails, but doesn't step back the whole way. His mistake. "You could always sing," Holga says, "if you want it that badly." Edgin isn't singing today. Isn't speaking either way, not that it's any of Barlow's business. "Don't you have ice to break?" Barlow backs off. Edgin's fingers find Holga's wrist, clumsy in the cold and squeeze. The clumsiness is so horrible, so not Edgin, that it feels like he's wrapping his hand around her heart. Edgin should be playing his lute, constantly twitching and moving, and it all comes together at once. Holga doesn't need anything else to do because the ice pick is her work, or is close enough to it. Edgin doesn't have that. Edgin works on a smaller scale. One person, a handful of strings, fingers instead of forearms. Tobias shouts for them to get back to work. Still, Holga finds time to wrap her hand around Edgin's and squeeze him back. Galia Strand is much more accommodating this time. It takes longer, but the quality is better. After dinner, Holga stuffs the gift down the front of her shirt and ignores every stare she gets. She doesn't get many. It's been months since they've arrived at Revel's End, and she's been gathering something like a reputation. When they get back to the cell, Edgin looks at her. He doesn't say anything, but she hears the question. "Something for you to do," she says, and throws the small bundle at him. It's not much. Two metal sticks that might have been pointed once, but are now dulled, and a bunch of string that isn't really yarn. "I can't teach you, but if anyone could teach himself..." She trails off, half concerned. Edgin is looking at the supplies like he can't believe it. Holga has heard countless drunken and maudlin stories about Zia Darvis. She knows Zia's preferred drinks. She knows Edgin's impression of her, something he had to be particularly lonely to break out. In all honesty, Holga isn't sure she would like the woman if they'd ever met, but it's not her job to like Zia. She's here to be a friend to Edgin. One thing she knows, definitively, is that Zia was crafty. Sewing, crochet. She liked to observe craftspeople. Edgin would set small amounts of money aside whenever he could to get her trinkets, the rougher the better, and handmade gifts. Or supplies. Zia liked the supplies.
"What is this?" Edgin says.
Holga is so relieved at hearing his voice for the first time in days that it takes a moment to register the question, and another to realize he means the knot yarn.
"An old uniform shirt," she answers, "cut up in a specific way. It won't make much, but it's something."
"I don't know how to do this," Edgin says.
Holga raises her eyebrows.
"Try."
"No, that's not..."
He sets the bundle on his bed. With no small amount of care, Holga is satisfied to note.
"Not the knitting, Holga. I mean, this. All this. I have muscles in places I've never had muscles before. I can't send word to Forge or Simon. Most days, standing up takes all the energy I have. And then I'm supposed to have more. I'm just stuck here alone."
It's the cruelest thing he could have said. He realizes it, obviously, but the words are hanging in the air between them. Holga can't leave, and the bucket of frozen piss isn't that satisfying to kick over, and there's not enough space for them to air out everything.
"Fuck you, Edgin," Holga says at last, and lies in her own bed, back to him.
They can't avoid each other, and they're only half trying, but by the gods, Holga puts all her heart into that half effort. She doesn't speak to anyone. Edgin, apparently through the worst of his maudlin phase, speaks to everyone. They sleep in their beds alone. Edgin offers her extra potatoes as peace offerings, and she debates refusing them on principle, but it feels wasteful, so she takes them without saying thank you. Galia Strand asks if she needs more yarn. Holga tells them to fuck off, with a level of enthusiasm that would make Ed proud if they were speaking. It's maybe 10 days before Holga wakes up one morning to a piece of fabric being flung at her face. She considers ignoring it, but curiosity gets the better of her, so she pulls it down enough to glare at Edgin.
"What's this?"
"The yarn you gave me was your shirt," Edgin says. "Right?"
"Yes," Holga says, "because it was." They were only given a few changes of clothes, and she had been unfortunate enough to tear one of her shirts on one of their first shifts on the ice. She hadn't been wearing it, and Galia hadn't been sure where to source yarn at first, and so she'd offered up her old shirt to become something new.
"You literally gave me the shirt off your back," Edgin says.
There's an emotion in his voice that Holga doesn't want to identify.
"Just so that I could have a prison hobby."
"We all need prison hobbies," Holga answers. "What is this?"
"I got you a new shirt," Edgin says, as though it should be obvious.
Holga groans. "You don't owe me a new shirt. This isn't some kind of one-for-one, eye-for-an-eye thing. You're my..." She's about to say friend, but the word sticks in her throat. Edgin knows everything about the Elks and about Marleman. Calling him a friend feels like a disservice. And some days, like an overstatement.
"It's not a transaction," she finishes. "Don't insult me by trying to make it one."
"I will never give you everything I owe you," Edgin says. "I mean that. Everything you did for me, for Kira."
"Stop."
"Here." Something else falls in her chest. Holga grasps at it and lifts a small scrap of fabric. It's the most horrendous piece of knitting she has seen in her life. A square about as tall and wide as her palm. The edges are ragged. There are holes peppered throughout.
"I'm still learning," Edgin says. "Obviously. But this is yours. Not because I owe you. Not because this is supposed to make us even. Because you gave me something I didn't know I needed. And I wanted to give you something back."
Holga blinks at it slowly, then turns to Edgen.
I can see you through this.
Edgen flushes slightly.
I'm not very good at it, obviously.
But I'm thinking I can learn to make some things. Scarves seem easy.
Yarn's a real bitch to source. It's not like there are a lot of spinning wheels around here.
I'll find a way, Edgen says, and Holga believes him completely. He has a way of finding ways.
Come here, she says.
Edgen obliges, lying head to toe in bed with her. She waits until he's not looking, and then slips the fabric scrap down the front of her shirt so it's resting over her heart.
You're a real dick when you're sad, you know that?
I know, Ed says. Sorry about what I said.
Not a great apology.
Hey, I made you a square.
Is that what that's supposed to be?
Shut the hell up, Edgen says. How about that?
Still not a great apology, Holga says, and Edgen snorts at a laugh, forehead thumping against her ankle.
For the first time in weeks, she feels herself relax, a slow, involuntary sensation that only reminds her of how lonely she's been, how lonely she doesn't feel anymore.
But you're getting there.
The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.